Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, November the 10th, and we're just a couple of weeks from Thanksgiving, so this year is flying by very fast. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're going to be spending some time on these impeachment hearings, the ones that are supposed to go public this week, and I think this could be entertaining to watch, and I think a huge risk for the Democrats, particularly if they don't have anything more than what we think they already have at the moment. A few fires, a few, as they say, a little excitement over at the on the Democrat side of the presidential race. Michael Bloomberg has apparently decided to go in. It's not actually official yet, as far as I know, but he's talking about going in, and he's going to skip the first few primaries. That's exactly, as I recall, what Rudy Giuliani did back in 2007, 2008. It didn't work out real well for him. But there's just a lot of bickering between the Democrats. We'll get into all these topics tonight with our friend Bill. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, how's everything going?
Well, you know, I look around and I see a Democratic Party, which is on the cusp of victory, they feel, in a presidential election, who do not have a single candidate capable of being president. And I see the Republican Party, and we wonder exactly how tough they're going to be in this absurd impeachment proceeding that is going to go public this week, where the American people will see before their eyes what amounts to a farce.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting, because Jim Jordan is apparently going to be the on that committee, the committee, whatever the committee is, that will be looking into all of this. Because, of course, this is not an official impeachment. This is the crazy part, Bill. This is not an official impeachment. So exactly, you know, how this develops, I don't know. But before we get into politics, Bill, I just wanted to quickly salute the Marines, who were founded on this day in 1775, the Continental Congress, as I read in my history today, created two battalions of Marines, and it all began there. Obviously, it changed a lot over the years. So congratulations to all the men and women who've worn the uniform of the Marines, Bill.
Well, the Marines were always the kind of the tip of the spear, the first to go in. I think that the Marine Corps has a special place. All our forces have a special place in American history. But the Marine Corps, in a way, has an even more important symbolic position, because they really do, as an armed force, represent the United States all over the world. And they, of course, in World War II were critically important to winning that war, because they had developed amphibious warfare. They were critically important in the Incheon operation in Korea, again, because they were experts at amphibious warfare. And they are, of course, the smallest of the armed forces. Now, they are part of the Navy, so they're part of a larger force. But as a force itself, they've always been very small, very effective, and on the other side, they have taken an awful lot of casualties for this country.
Mm-hmm. What I always find interesting is that I think if you were to talk to most people around the world and they think of the American Armed Forces, it's always the Marines who they associate with first, and that's for the reason you indicated, that so often the Marines are the first to go in. For example, in Grenada, back in 1983. It was Marines who went into Grenada. And it's always Marines at the forefront, like you're saying. So I think that's the reason why so many people think perhaps it's a bigger force than it really is, Bill.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it has that enormous symbolic value. And what we ought to add is that there have been iconic moments in the history of the Marine Corps that have added to that tremendous symbolic value, especially the famous picture on Iwo Jima of the flag raising, which is the basis for the Marine Corps Monument in Washington.
Now, that particular photo, not to get us off the topic, but that particular photo, recently they admitted that they had misidentified one of the four men on that photo. Did you hear about that, Bill?
Yes. Actually, it's the second time it's happened. It happened about 5 years ago also. It reflects the chaos of war, that when the identifications were originally made, there were six men named. It turned out that two of them were incorrect. What is interesting is that neither of the two who participated and who were left off the original register ever complained publicly about it, which I think is fascinating.
I think it is. It's part of a it's a different mindset when you're with the Marines. You don't want any credit. And I think had it, you know, would that be in a college campus today? I'm sure the people left out would be complaining that they were discriminated against. And here, these two men never said anything over the years, Bill.
That's exactly right. I think in the case of the first one, who died about 3 or 4 years ago, they found a large picture box under his bed, and there were an inordinate number of pictures of the flag raising. And they became interested as to why, because there's nothing about him. But when they investigated further and did a complete investigation, they found out that it was really their son or whatever relative it was of the people who found the box. And that officially was changed. And now we have another official change. It's quite remarkable that for this many years, the wrong names have been on the picture.
Right. No, it is. It is really an amazing story. Another important holiday, Bill, tomorrow, Veterans Day. And I know that we at church today, at Mass today, several of our veterans dressed up, you know, in their uniforms, and I thought that was very nice. And Veterans Day continues to be one of the most popular holidays. Certainly, I know, a day that everybody looks forward to. I mean, everybody seems to go out of their way to honor the veterans, and I think that's great, Bill.
Well, I do, too. I think there are enough Americans left who do appreciate what our veterans have done for us. I don't know if that will be the case in 20 years, although I think that America, being very much a sectionalized country, where different sections, different states have rather different traditions, that there will always be a core in America that will honor the veteran, you know, well beyond our lifetimes. And I hope that core remains and isn't melting away with the rest of American history in our school classrooms.
That's right. And, of course, it was the 11th of November of the 11th hour, I think that's how it goes, that this particular day was created to honor, I guess, the veterans of World War One, and then it became more the veterans of every war.
Well, it was called Armistice Day originally, and the armistice occurred on the 11th minute of the 11th hour of the 11th day of November 1918. It was also called Decoration Day. I don't know if that term was ever used in the United States, but it was certainly used in Great Britain. And on that day, you could go out and buy poppies. There were sellers from veterans groups, and you could wear a poppy that day. And there was also the tradition begun of putting flags on the graves of dead soldiers. Now, those traditions are quite old at this point. They're somewhat vague. I hope they continue.
Yes, I do. And actually, the tradition of Veterans Day is also followed in Canada. I noticed some things about Canadian soldiers being honored up there, too. I think a lot of people forget the tremendous work of the Canadian soldiers in World War II. And recently in Afghanistan, I mean, the Canadian soldiers were absolutely fabulous in how they fought. And, you know, they took some heavy losses, Canadian Marines in Afghanistan. I mean, you know, normally when you think of a lot of our allies, they tend to stay away from the fighting, but not the Canadians. They actually went in and fought in Afghanistan, which is a good thing, Bill.
Mm-hmm. And you're quite right about some of the other allies. They each have their own rules of engagement, so that even under NATO, they can decide what it is they want to do. It's a kind of a, you know, a high school level party that they think they're going to. The Germans sent troops to Afghanistan, but they were not allowed to fight. And I don't know why you would even want to send the troops, but they performed other chores, but they were not permitted to fight. I think that is one of the things that that President Trump talks about when he talks about other countries pulling their fair share.
That's right. And it's interesting. I heard a story. I don't know if it's true or not, but it was pretty funny. A plane of French soldiers arrived in Afghanistan, and when they got to the airport, the American general looked at all of them and said, "Hey, guys, I've already got enough people to protect the airport. So if you're coming here to protect the airport, I got lots of people to do that and direct traffic." And I don't know if it's a true story or not, but I think it makes the point that a lot of countries were sending soldiers, but not really to fight. They were there maybe symbolic or for whatever reason. But I think President Trump is exactly right when he stands up to NATO and says, "Hey, guys, you know, you gotta do your fair share, not just monetarily, but I think they got to do some fighting as well, Bill."
Well, I think he's absolutely correct. I think that the traditions that were begun after World War II, the traditions that formed NATO, are fading away. And you, of course, have young generations who've never even heard of some of the major battles of World War II, unless they saw a movie.
Right. Right. And you know, just to follow up on that point, this week was the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. That's 30 years. So that means all three of my sons, well, one of them wasn't even born, and the other two were very little. So, I mean, they have no personal recollection of the Berlin Wall and what it meant to my generation and so many others. So, I mean, 30 years is a long time. And so these things, unless people are reminded of these things, they just forget them. One more thing about Berlin, they're going to build a statue of President Reagan in Berlin, and I think that's great, Bill.
Yeah. I think it's being built by the United States.
Okay.
That there was some kind of controversy over the statue of President Reagan because there's some lady in Berlin who runs the monuments section of the Berlin government. And I think she felt it was unfair to single out President Reagan because other people helped as well. And I'm sure they did, and I don't want to take away anyone else's contribution. But the idea that anyone would have an objection to building a statue to the man who symbolized the fall of Berlin is a little odd, but the Europeans think a little oddly.
That's exactly right. I mean, but it is true, and this is one of the sad things about today's Democrat Party, Bill. It is true that, you know, for a long time, there was really no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans when it came to the Soviet Union and then Berlin. I mean, I think both parties were on the same page. And, of course, that's not the case anymore. The parties are very different now. Yeah, the parties are very different now. Well, let's talk a little bit about the impeachment hearings, Bill. They get started, I guess, on Wednesday or Tuesday. These are supposed to be the public hearings. But, again, there's no impeachment. No actual impeachment vote has taken place. So what we have, in a sense, is hearings without, like you were saying, I think off the air, when we were talking off the air, you were talking about previous impeachment hearings and how fair they it's like they went out of their way to make sure that both sides got to speak out because they didn't want to be accused of being one-sided.
That's right. Well, an impeachment is so serious. because you're impeaching, after all, an elected official, somebody who was elected by the people of the country, or in other cases, the people who elect a judge, and reversing the will of the people is a very solemn act.
Right. And you better have a pretty good case against the president. In this case, Bill, I could be wrong, but unless something comes out, unless they put up something that I have no idea and something very damaging against President Trump, I don't see anything that is going to turn, let's say, somebody like me from thinking this is a farce to thinking, well, maybe they've got something here I should listen to, Bill. I don't see anything. I think it would have come out already, Bill.
I think that's true. Now, again, no, do I have a cold? Again, we should go back to Watergate and realize that it was during the impeachment hearings that Alexander Butterfield, who at that time was head of the Federal Aviation Agency, revealed that the White House had a taping system. And that was a major, major event in the Watergate hearings, because the people doing the investigating then realized they had another and very important source of information, which was the White House tapes. It is amazing that people didn't know that the White House had a taping system. One would assume that it did, but it was never brought up before his testimony. So you can never tell what might happen. There could be some real surprises in store for us. Now, we should add that while the impeachment hearings are going on, there are other branches of government that are completing their investigations. The investigation being conducted by the Justice Department into how the Russia collusion hoax got started is critically important, and the investigator is a man of impeccable integrity. Then there's another investigation going on dealing with the pre-election antics, apparently mostly of the Democratic Party. That's going on, and we don't know what that will show. Some of these investigations have the capacity of disrupting the entire impeachment process, and I hope that's what the Republicans will do.
Yeah, well, I have, you know, I have a good feeling that Jim Jordan is going to give it to the Democrats as well as anybody. I mean, he doesn't hold anything back, and he has just been put in that committee. And normally, Bill, this would be this investigation would be done either by a select committee or a judiciary committee. And that's not happening here. Now, in the Watergate hearings, as I recall, that was a select committee that had been created where both sides got to ask questions. Remember, Howard Baker was there representing the Republican side. And the other gentleman who was the counsel for the Republican side, who became a senator. Who became a senator. He was a movie star, and then he also became a senator. I can't think of his name right now. He ran for president in 2008, but he was the counsel for the Republican side.
I remember who you're referring to, and he became actually quite a prominent actor in Hollywood. Now, who was his name? He was a very, very good Republican senator. Yes, the Republicans were given absolute fairness. The Democrats were given absolute fairness. The process was clean. It was clean right from the start. And the evidence was presented. This is a very different point of view in terms of how a proceeding like this should be conducted. It's being conducted purely as a political hit job by the Democratic Party, where you know the result before the hearing even begins.
Right.
You know they're going to impeach him. I mean, that's part of the script.
That's right. But I'm optimistic.
The man you're looking for, by the way, in terms of the Republicans, is Fred Thompson.
Fred Thompson. There you go. I was trying to find him as well while you were speaking. I was going to my iPhone and going back. And Fred Thompson, who ran for president in 2008.
Yes, he did.
There was a lot of optimism about Fred Thompson in 2008, as I recall. But he didn't get off the ground.
He didn't ignite. He just didn't have that ability to run. You know, that's a job in itself. It's an art in itself.
Yeah.
How do you run for president? And he didn't seem to have the pizzazz, the snap, the sense of urgency to run for president.
Right. Yeah, that's right. I was always very impressed with him in the Senate, but as you say, when he ran for president, Fred Thompson didn't do anything. So I guess we'll find out next week, Bill, just how serious this whole thing is. I think the Democrats are running the risk here that unless they hit a home run, I think people are just going to tune this out, and it's going to be a joke, Bill. They're going to have to hit a home run on opening day and say, hey, we got this. And unless they do that, I don't see this thing going very far, Bill.
I don't think it's going to go very far. I wrote at Urgent Agenda today that there does seem to be a slight trend in the president's favor in public opinion. Because
yes.
He was down. He was down by quite a bit in the Rasmussen poll in the last couple of weeks. And then he bounced right back. And I'm hoping that the reason is people are becoming as disgusted as you and I are by the whole procedure, that there really is nothing there. And if that happens, the Democratic Party could run into a disaster, a fate for which I pray. I mean, please run into a disaster. I don't want anyone to get hurt, but politically run into a disaster because they deserve it. They have handled
they
it
really
so badly.
Do. They really do. And I think I told you last week about Willie Brown in California writing that post, you know, warning the Democrats and warning that all of these new Democrats who were elected as part of the majority ran really on health care. They didn't run on impeachment. And I think they need to be very careful for that. So I guess next week when we get together, Bill, we'll have a better idea of what the open hearings are going to be like. But if I have to bet money today, and all I do is bet a cup of coffee, if I have to bet you a cup of coffee today, Bill, I think it's gonna flop. I really do, because I don't think they have anything. They wouldn't be holding on to something if they actually had something, Bill.
I think that's true. I think that I apologize again for my cold tonight.
Sure.
If they had something big, it would have either come out or leaked out, because it's awfully hard to keep a secret in Washington. They would have to have a bombshell. Now, they're depending apparently on this Ambassador Taylor, who has said that he understood without hesitation that this whole thing was based on a quid pro quo with the Ukrainians. First of all, I don't think the American people give a damn about quid pro quos with the Iranians. I don't think it puts them to bed every night. You know,
no.
Every night they go to bed and say, oh, I hope there haven't been any quid pro quos with Ukraine today. I mean, I've got to live another day as a citizen.
Right.
I don't think they care. I think they see this for what it is, a bunch of stuff that goes on every day. I also think that even though the president himself is not personally very popular, I think his policies are popular, and I do think people are beginning to see that they could lose a lot of the gains they've made by putting in the party that created the mess in the first place, which is the Democratic Party.
Another post that you wrote today, Bill, was about blacks and Hispanics.
Yes.
And how they're, you know, polling data shows that President Trump is looking better with Hispanics and African Americans. And, I mean, he doesn't have to move the needle too much in either one of those two. I mean, if he takes the black vote from 9 to 15, that's a huge gain. And if he takes the Hispanic vote from 27 to 35, that's a huge gain as well, Bill. So he doesn't have to move it,
there.
You know. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have to move it a lot to benefit in the reelection. Bill, let me take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the Democrats who are having they have a new candidate, I guess, Michael Bloomberg, who's going to be joining the crowd this week. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, as we like to do on Sundays. We're chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Just a quick plug for my friend Carlos Geddes and his music. We have a link to his website as well as the schedule on the show information. Bill, I wanted you to know that global warming, I'm sure, is going to get blamed for this, but we will wake up at 56 tomorrow in Dallas, and when we go to sleep, it'll be like 32. So I'm sure that global warming will be made responsible for that 30-point drop in degrees, Bill.
There's no question about it. I think this is now settled science that anything that happens in the weather is caused by global warming, and it's our fault. It is humanity that is doing this, except for all the other countries. That's right.
It's global warming. We need to remind everybody that China and India contribute quite a bit to the problem, but I've never seen any marches in front of the Chinese embassy telling the Chinese to stop polluting the air, Bill.
That's absolutely true. Well, we must understand that they are of a different culture, and who are we to question their view of the culture? I mean, I think it would be outrageous after we attacked the Japanese at Pearl Harbor, merely tourist planes flying over Pearl Harbor, that we add to the insult by trying to blame them for global warming. Very bad.
That's right. No, I think you're exactly right. So let's, if you get a chance tomorrow, check out Dallas weather, because it's going to be like, you know, when we wake up in the morning, it'll be nice, and when we go to bed at night, we'll need sweaters and a fireplace. Well, let's talk about these Democrats, Bill. There is a new name, apparently a new name, although I don't think it's official yet, but he wants to do it, but I don't know if he has actually officially said he's going to do it. But Michael Bloomberg is getting in, and he's not going to even mess with the first three or four primaries. He's going to go, I guess, right into whatever the fourth one is, which is either California or Texas.
Super Tuesday, I think.
Super Tuesday, yeah.
Yes.
And first of all, your reaction.
Knowing Mike Bloomberg, he may even wait until after the election to run.
That's right. He may decide that he needs, as you like to call it, do a little mulling, right?
And just kind of a muller.
Yeah. Yes. And maybe study the situation for a couple more years before he decides. But Michael Bloomberg is an interesting fellow. Obviously, a very successful businessman. He was a Republican. Then I guess he became an independent. He's now a Democrat. He's going to run as a Democrat. I don't know why he's wasting his time as a Democrat, Bill. If he asked for my opinion, I would say, you got all the money in the world, run as an independent, and skip these. I don't know why he's doing it as a Democrat. He's got nothing to gain by getting into these arguments with Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, Bill.
I think you're absolutely correct, and I've written that at Urgent Agenda. He should have run as an independent. He has all the money anybody could need to get into this race. He could create, in effect, his own political party, his own movement, pay for it, run it, direct it, not have to go before every one of these little interest groups in the Democratic Party to tell how deeply he feels about the United Auto Workers. I mean, just last night I was contemplating the contributions made to Americans by left-handed Crimeans. Why there is a statue right in Washington. I go all the time just for inspiration. I mean, he could have avoided all this by simply running as an independent and saying, I am an independent Democrat. I am tired of the Democratic Party. Here I am. Here are the things I would do. And he would at least have the freedom to run his own campaign.
And honestly, if he were to do that, Bill, I could see him in some polling data number two to President Trump. In other words, I could see him being a serious threat to President Trump as an independent. And then whoever the Democrat nominee is would be third in the polls. Because I think Bloomberg is a serious guy. I don't agree with everything, but he's a serious guy who comes across as a serious guy who can concentrate on serious issues. I mean, I don't think a lot of Americans are crazy about candidates like Elizabeth Warren saying yesterday or the day before that if she's elected, she consider stopping deportations until the Congress does something about immigration reform.
Yes.
I mean, that's the kind of garbage that I don't think most people want. I don't want to hear that. I mean, that's garbage.
No, and I think Trump would be all over her. I think she will be a very weak candidate.
Because, oh, absolutely.
Because first of all, she goes in as the only candidate in American history, and people will say, who's a woman? Who's a woman? Who's... No, the only candidate in American history who has spent most of her career lying about who she is.
Mm-hmm.
We've never had a situation like this before.
No.
I mean, if anyone thinks the Republicans are going to forget about it, they're crazy. Now, the Democrats and the Democratic news media will try to put that behind her, but they never will succeed. I mean, Trump will be out there calling her Pocahontas. You can be sure that other things she has done have not been entirely on the up and up. They will reveal that she was a corporate lawyer who made millions, and I just can't see her getting off the floor.
No, and I think you're right. I think that Trump, if she is the nominee, I think the Trump re-election team is going to destroy her because they've got, well, first of all, they got all the money in the world to do it. Trump is going to walk into this re-election with lots of cash, lots of videos on all of these people, and he's not afraid to use them. He's going to go after them, whoever the nominee is. Now, we understand Bernie Sanders was screaming that Mr. Bloomberg, we're not going to let him get away with buying the election. Well, that's pretty silly too, Bill. I mean, what about the
sure.
other guy who's running, Tom Steyer? What's he doing? I mean,
he's also trying to buy the election.
Yes.
But he's a Democrat, so his money is worth more.
Right.
No, but look,
right.
look who is Bernie Sanders? He's an old socialist. That's the very first thing that they say in any campaign. We are not going to allow people to steal our votes. We are not going to. Our vote is not for sale. Our country is not for sale. And then, of course, they suddenly find themselves with a Tom Steyer or with an Elizabeth Warren, and they don't know what to say. I think the image of that party is that it's a party that is against anyone who's ever achieved anything. You know, here's Bloomberg, who you may or may not like, that's a fair judgment, but who built an enormous business, the Bloomberg Communications Network, which is one of the biggest in the world. He did it entirely from scratch. He employs thousands of people, but they're going to hold that against him.
Right. And just out of curiosity, Bill, Michael Bloomberg did that himself, or did he inherit that from the family?
No, I think he built Bloomberg Communications himself.
Oh, okay. I wasn't familiar with the story, but I've always had a sense of respect for Michael Bloomberg for exactly the reason you indicated. This is a man who built something, and he built something good with a good reputation. I mean, what has Elizabeth Warren built? What has Bernie Sanders built? We don't have to ask about Beto anymore. But, I mean,
no.
If you look at some of the others, I mean, what have they built? I mean, this fellow, Julian Castro from Texas, I mean, there's concern that, you know, that Bloomberg wants to buy the election or that there's too much money in politics. And why is Julian Castro asking for money then if money doesn't matter, Bill?
Yes, well, that's true. And, of course, when Beto was in, he was part of a family of multimillionaires, and that didn't seem to bother anybody. It only seems to bother people when it's Mike Bloomberg. Mike Bloomberg has become enormously wealthy based on his own skills, based on his own creative ability, and they want to take him apart for it. I think they're going to find that the American people will respond exactly the opposite, that they will admire the fact of what he has built up over the years. And
yes.
And that they will admire what he has contributed. I don't think that their position is a strong one. I mean, they're running a primary, and indeed a series of primaries, filled with candidates that nobody cares about. It's quite a remarkable thing to see.
That's right, and they're fighting with each other. I heard the senator from Minnesota. I always forget her name. The one who's running. Yeah. I heard that she took a shot at Mayor Pete and I'm paraphrasing what she said, but something along the lines, you know, if Mayor Pete was a woman, he wouldn't even be taken seriously. Because I guess she's referring to his lack of experience being the mayor of a city, I don't know, 100,000 people. And then on top of that, apparently he's not running the city very well. He's not very popular in the Cityville.
No.
One thing that I was also going to say, Bill, about, and I read about this, it may have been an urgent agenda, that one of the problems that the Democrats candidates are having is getting black people excited. They don't seem to, I mean, Bernie Sanders doesn't do it. Elizabeth Warren doesn't do it. Mayor Pete doesn't do it. I don't know about Michael Bloomberg. The only one who seems to generate any enthusiasm among African Americans is Joe Biden, but he's got a lot of other problems, Bill.
Yes, and isn't it interesting, by the way, that the only one who does generate enthusiasm in the African-American community is a white guy, an old white guy. I mean, I think that there's going to be a vote to throw all these African-Americans out of the African-American community, that they're not woke. I think you're going to have to be prove yourself to be woke. Yes, it's true. There's no real enthusiasm for any candidate. I mean, how many people have you heard recently talking about the wanting of Elizabeth Warren, or the we need Biden? I mean, I haven't heard that cheer once. And it's interesting that there does not seem to be a natural place for any minority group, because clearly Cory Booker is going nowhere with the so-called black vote. And as far as the other votes, like the Hispanic vote, the gentleman named Castro that you mentioned, Julian Castro, does not seem to be exciting them at all. Now, maybe we're growing up a bit as a country, and people are realizing that they can get a better deal from somebody who isn't actually a member of their group.
Or maybe the identity politics card, if you will, has been worn out. Maybe they've played it so much that it's like the kid who cried wolf. It doesn't seem to have the same impact anymore. That's what I think it is. I think people are sick and tired of hearing that Trump is a racist, or he doesn't like this group or doesn't like that group, and they're saying, okay, you've told me 50 times that he's racist. Now explain to me how I'm going to pay Obamacare. And I think
that's
where
exactly
a lot of people are in that situation, Bill, where you know they want to hear something up more than just Trump is a racist, Bill.
That's true, and I think they realize that this is the game that's played in every election. The black establishment manages to identify every opponent that they're running against as a racist, or a tool of the racists, or somebody who's playing around with the racists, or something else. But I mean, it didn't begin with the candidates of this particular race. There have been for several presidential elections individuals who are of color, but who don't in any way represent the communities they claim to.
That's right. That's exactly right. But Bill, looking at next week, of course, I guess the big story is the public hearings. Anything else that you'll be keeping an eye on next week at Urgent Agenda?
Yes, I think all of us are keeping an eye on the most important political question, certainly of the week and probably of the month, and that is, if Mayor Bloomberg is elected President of the United States, would we still be able to have our big Slurpees? Because he tried to ban them in New York City, and there is great fear that this could be a plot against the big Slurpees, the over 16-ounce cups. And people here are worried. I've seen people weeping in the street.
Right. Well, young people, he might have a hard time with young people with that one, Bill.
Yeah, well,
the last time I checked, the Slurpees are pretty popular with young people. He may lose the youth vote over that one, Bill.
Right, and he may lose the vote of people over 95.
He may lose a lot of votes over that. Probably not going to bring it up too much, Bill.
I don't think so. But I think it's an exciting time, because they're now talking about the possibility of Hillary getting in, and
yes,
it's getting greater and greater by the day. So we will have another person of high character to talk about.
Right.
And on the impeachment side, we don't know how it's going to go. And also, we don't know what's going to happen internationally. You know, people make the point that foreign policy hasn't even been discussed in this campaign.
Mm-hmm.
It's remarkable, absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, on the Democrat side, you would think, you wouldn't know that we have a foreign policy. I mean,
no,
if you
wouldn't.
Listen to these people, I mean, it just seems like, you know, they're interested in lots of things, but I don't think there has been a discussion at all on any of their primary or any of their debates about foreign policy. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time. Keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda, and we'll check to see we'll get your updates on Slurpees next week, Bill.
Very much so. I'm going to be out, interviewing and researching that subject. I feel it is an anti-Slurpee conspiracy, and I want to appear before the impeachment committee to make that point.
That's right, and I'm sure that Mr. Schiff will be more than happy to give you a microphone, Bill.
Oh, you can't! I've gotten calls already. I mean, this is
okay.
this may be their big issue.
That's right. Yeah, that we may be blaming Trump for the Slurpees pretty soon.
Of course. Who else?
Okay. All right, Bill. Have a wonderful day and keep up the great work. And we'll get together again next week.
Looking forward to it, Silvio.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, always checking with him on Sundays and getting his very interesting views on lots of things, including Slurpees this week. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. If you know or have any friends in Dallas, you may want to check the weather report. Or if you're flying to Dallas over the next 24 hours, check the weather report because it's going to get cold here, I guess 24 hours from now. Good night, everybody.